pieces come and go, and I'm forever grateful. Come and tell me long and slow exactly what I wait for. Better times, yeah, better times, somehow I don't believe it. I built a house up long ago just to up and leave it.
On today's episode of On the Wink Podcast, I'm pleased to be joined by Mr. Thomas Harris, who is one of the newer members of the Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever National Board of Directors. He's a very passionate advocate for bobwhite quail, and I'm looking forward to talking about Mr. Harris's really unique background, where his love for quail originated, and a big event coming up in Alabama later this autumn. So without further ado, allow me to introduce the 2019 Alabama Conservationist of the Year and the newest member of the Alabama Business Hall of Fame, Mr. Thomas Harris, our featured guest. Thomas!
Hey,
great to see you. Yeah, good morning. How are you?
Always good to see you. Always see you in the nicest places. So, top of the morning to you.
I think the last time we were together in person was right before the Trampled by Turtles Concert for Conservation. Yeah. You and your lovely wife were at the happy hour before that concert kicked off.
What a great event that was. I'm looking forward to Kansas City.
Y'all
been working hard. You always do. It's amazing.
Yes, sir. Well, for folks that, you're obviously really well known in the state of Alabama, for our audience across the country is Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever membership and our partners. You've been on the board for probably about a year now. Why don't we start at the beginning, kind of where you grew up. Tell our listeners a little bit about your background.
Sure, glad to. I was born in Wetumpka. We'll talk a little bit more about Wetumpka a little bit later. It's a small community just north of Montgomery, beautiful little downtown, historic area, and it's right in the middle of the state of Alabama. It's a great outdoor activity county with lakes and good hunting. And I was born there, and then my father moved the family to Montgomery shortly thereafter to practice law. So I spent the rest of my childhood growing up in Montgomery and loved it. It was a great time in the 50s to grow up in Montgomery. And we played sports. Every sport that was available, we jumped into, and then we went hunting and fishing. So I've kind of grown up in the hunting world, and being a part of this organization really fits exactly what I enjoy the most. And this organization, Quail Forever, Pheasants Forever, is such a passionate, mission-driven group of people. I've never seen anything quite as serious as the effort. And I'm very excited about the future of Quail Forever.
We'll dive into Quail Forever in a moment, but when you talk about serious, from a person that's a sports fan in Alabama, I've got to believe the rivalry between Alabama and Auburn is about as serious as it comes in the state of Alabama. Where do you fall on that rivalry?
Well, I went to Auburn.
So the answer's self-evident.
Yeah. Well, my wife went to Alabama, so.
Oh, wow!
So, but we've gotten past that. But it's a major event in Alabama, and the state kind of shuts down during that period of time. It's been fun and it's been healthy for Alabama and Auburn. It's a great rivalry, and has mixed results every year. It seems like.
What'd you study at Auburn?
I went to business school there. It wasn't any specialty in business at the time I went there. It was just a general business degree. And as I was winding up my time in college, I decided to go back to Montgomery and get a job, and I finished at Auburn University in the evening. So, my first job was working at the bank in the mail room. So we picked up the mail at 4:30 in the morning and distributed it around the bank. And then we jumped into a teller booth. So I got to know the ground floor banking pretty early in my banking career.
Ed, tell me a little bit more about your career, what you did. Because you're retired isn't quite the right word for you because you're so busy. But from a business perspective, you're retired these days, aren't you?
Well, I thought I was going to retire, but I didn't. I don't think I retired very well. So after a 45-year career in investment banking, we started a firm in Montgomery and spread around the Southeast. And then we entered into a merger with Stifel Financial out of St. Louis. And I finished my career there a year ago. Our work was financing city and county projects and school boards and universities, housing bonds, and all over the country. So I felt real good about my career. I wanted to try some other things. My family and I started some treatment centers for alcohol and drug centers, and we built four in the last year. So I'm spending a great deal of my time on that mission.
That's very admirable. Where's that passion come from?
Well, I've been watching what's been going on around the country in the epidemic of overdoses and all that's going on in the mental health field. And we just didn't think we had enough access of quality care in Alabama. So it's been real interesting, and I think we're doing some good.
Yeah, I have no doubt that it's a testament to, you know, just your belief system and how busy you are and how many different endeavors, and we'll get into some of those. I want to circle back to you talked about growing up in a family that loved the outdoors, hunting. Tell me a little bit about that. What was your engagement in bird hunting as a kid? Is that something you did every weekend with your family, or what was that journey like for you growing up in the outdoors in Alabama?
Well, it started originally. We had a piece of property close to Wetumpka that we would go up every year and pick lighter wood for the winter. And my mother would pick berries by the stream, and every now and then, and walking through those woods, we would jump a covey of birds. And they pretty much would just shook the earth when they got up. I think I was hooked from day one. Walking that little farm up close to Montgomery. And after that, some of my school buddies and I, after school, we'd borrow a bird dog and head out to the country and see what we could find. But back in those days, as you well know, there were a lot of birds. And where we went, you really almost didn't need a dog. There were so many birds. And you would generally see a covey if you were just riding down the road. Like a gravel road, you'd see a covey running down the side of the road. Or you may see a covey flush and just pass over the road while you were driving. So there were a lot of crops. There were a lot of cover back in those days. And it's a lot of soybean fields, a lot of corn fields. So it was a pretty healthy environment for quail. That was how I really got finally hooked on it. I didn't get my first bird dog till I was about 21. But ever since then, I've had dogs, and all kind of dogs, Brittany's and pointers and short hairs. And today we have English Cockers and we have Flushing Labs. So we have about 12 dogs in the kennel. So we're fully ingrained in the business and to us, it's hunting is all about the fellowship, all about the dogs, and all about the experience.
Yeah, that has kind of taken a new level in your life with Gusto. Maybe not new. How long have you owned Gusto? And tell us about Gusto.
Well, we bought the first piece in 2004, so that's 20 years. And it was a small place, 120 acres or so with a lake. I thought it was just going to be a fishing hole for myself and my son. But it didn't take long to find out that there was a piece of property next door that was for sale. And long story short, we ended up finding 9 pieces of property contiguous to the original piece. And so now we're a little over 1,700 acres. So putting those pieces of property together was a real labor of love and fun and educational, because each property had a look different. It may have been a cattle pasture or heavy woods, but we had to take fencing down. We had to put in a road system to connect. We had to do a lot of spraying. We had to open up the canopy to get the sunlight in to grow the warm season native grasses. So each property took a lot of effort. And then by the time we finished that piece, we were on to the next piece. So we essentially have been managing it, working on it for the last 20 years. And most recently, we added another 700 acres. It took us a year to clean it up. So we hope that we'll be able to have it in good shape in the next year or two.
Wow. Yeah, so I think you and I met, I want to say it was 2016, somewhere in that neighborhood, 2016, 2017. I was fortunate enough to come down to Alabama and hunt a variety of different lodges. And you had set up the agenda where Gusto was the last destination on that hunt. And it was very wise of you, because if it would have been the first, I never would have left. Gusto is just, it's so well maintained. The habitat is so beautiful. And the birds, you know, do you have any estimate how many wild coveys are on Gusto? Because when you, like you say, the earth shook as a youngster when you saw that first covey of quail. When I think about a covey of quail rising together, it's like a swarm of bumblebees, and there's electricity in the air with all those wings beating, and the hair on the ends of your arms stand up, and it's hard to match that energy with anything else in the world. And at Gusto, you can experience that over and over. Any sense of how many wild coveys there are in Gusto?
Well, that's a great question, and I don't know if I've got a good answer, but we call them feathered dynamite down here.
Mm-hmm.
I heard somewhere one time where somebody called them the chocolate kisses of the woods, which I like it. So we just love quail. I don't know how many, but I do know the ones that get up before you get there or wow. So they can hear us coming. So you just get to see the covey. And I remember at the end of this past season, we got a covey up before we could get out of the vehicle, and they flew 100 yards away and got another covey up when they flew over them. And then that covey flew over another area, and all three coveys got up at the same time.
Now, those
wild birds, and they're just fun to watch. We don't not often get to shoot them, but we do get to move them.
For having owned Gusto and this property, which it's a labor of love for you to turn into the best possible quail habitat in Alabama you can conceivably find. What have you learned? Anything that jumps out to you that you've learned over the years about quail habitat and things that you have to be cognizant of as you turn this amalgamation of a number of different properties into Quail Valhalla?
So, yeah, if you just, it's such a commitment. I'm delighted to talk about it. We love that land so much that we put it in a conservation easement. There's very few things that you can do in perpetuity that I'm aware of, and we've spent so much time working on it, getting it right. It's just, you really need to lean on wildlife biologists and get them involved early so you don't make a mistake once or twice. You can get it right the first time. More than anything, it just takes patience, and it takes Mother Nature bats 1,000 and she bats last. It's really all about restoring the habitat. And this was a steep learning curve for me. I didn't go to school in forestry or biology, but if you just go to some of these field days that are put on by various groups like Quail Forever and Alabama Wildlife Federation, you can really pick up a lot. But, it's been so much fun to do. I encourage friends and landowners to do it. And it's not just for quail, because everything you do for quail is good for wildlife. Mm-hmm. And we've lost so much of the grasslands in this country. It's real concerning to me. And that's exciting about really being involved with Quail Forever, that's what we need to be doing, is advocating and educating private landowners of all the things, that all the tools that are available, particularly prescribed fire, and what that means to the property and to wildlife.
Yeah, no doubt about it. How often do you do prescribed burning on Gusto every single year?
Yes, we do. And we've gotten to the size now that we're going to be doing some rotation. Mm-hmm. So I think this year we'll be starting that process. But it's really amazing what it can do to a piece of property.
Yeah. Quail Forever, you talked about a couple times how passionate you are about this volunteer gig you have on the National Board of Directors. How did you first get involved with Quail Forever? How did it enter your consciousness, and how did the opportunity to join the Board of Directors emerge?
So we've been really thirsty for the kind of initiative that Quail Forever can bring to Alabama. Alabama Wildlife Federation does a good job, but I really love seeing what Quail Forever's commitment. And I think it's just, I was involved in Quail Unlimited years ago. So when we invited Quail Forever to Alabama, I think it was 2018, and we had that event with Tall Timbers and Howard, and came down and we spent that week together. That was my first real opportunity to get to know what Quail Forever was all about, and the education and the assets and the resources that y'all bring. So being a part of this at the board level is really remarkable, how much y'all involved and what your commitment is. My job is to spread the word in Alabama and beyond about what it looks like now and what it looks like perhaps in the future, that we can turn this around and maybe bring the quail back to where, somewhere close to where it used to be.
Yeah, and you are a great person at spreading the word. I think I ship you 2 boxes of Quail Forever journals about every other month, because you're out there on the street spreading the Quail Forever word. So sincerest thank you for what you're doing for the organization. That 2018 event that you talked about was put together by another organization that's near and dear to your heart. Before we talk about the Alabama Black Belt Adventures, I want to give a shout out to Onyx. Onyx is a proud supporter of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. Onyx is a national sponsor of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. In the preview text of this podcast episode's description, check out that text, and there is a link from Onyx where you can get a free 1 month subscription to Onyx. And if you use the code PFQF at that link, you'll get 20% off your next subscription to Onyx. And they at Onyx will donate a portion of your purchase back to Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's wildlife habitat mission. So thank you so much to Onyx for supporting our organization and for supporting this podcast. All right, Thomas, the Alabama Black Belt Adventures was the entity responsible for bringing Howard. My marketing team, editors, photographers, graphic designers, and then some media down to Alabama a number of years ago. You were a founder of Alabama Black Belt Adventures in 2009. Tell me about, again, it's not like you had any shortage of things going on in your life. What was the impetus for starting this entity?
So Alabama Black Belt Adventures was formed in, I believe, 2009. And originally it was to promote the Black Belt, which is of Alabama, which is in the central part of Alabama. It's about 23 counties, and it's fairly rural and has not experienced the kind of economic growth that the rest of the state has enjoyed. So we were scratching our heads about what we could do. It's really started off as a rural economic development program initiative to preserve the countryside for economic growth, for ecotourism. So there are wonderful hunting lodges all throughout the Black Belt, but they were just not very well known. So our objective was to take the natural assets that were in the Black Belt and let's figure out how to market them. So now, after 15 years, we think we're making progress. The economic impact of Alabama Black Belt Adventures for those 23 counties is $1.7 billion, the economic impact study that was done last year. So it really is an initiative funded by the state of Alabama. It's a nonprofit, and our job is to bring more awareness to the opportunities to hunt and fish and enjoy the cultural assets in the Black Belt of Alabama.
One of the stops on that visit that I will always remember is the town of Union Springs, and which is part of Alabama Black Belt. And I remember coming into that town, and there's a statue of a bird dog in the center of the town square, and there's a giant mural of a bird dog painting on the side of a building. I mean, the Union Springs has a real rich history with quail hunting and bird dogs, doesn't it?
Yeah, they've had a number of championships there in the bird dog world. It's kind of the central universe of quail hunting in Alabama. A number of great quail plantations, and it's a big economic driver in that community.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful community. And yeah, I mean, honestly, the entire Black Belt's beautiful. And as you mentioned, it's a little, I mean, it's rural, but that's the foundation of that hunting and fishing culture in the state of Alabama. It's just a wonderful, wonderful place to go visit, and there's lots of opportunity to experience quail and quail hunting culture there.
Yes, sir.
You also mentioned Wetumpka, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, where you're from. And you got another event, another endeavor, the Wetumpka Wildlife Arts Festival. Tell me about that adventure that you're on here more recently.
This is a lot of fun. You know, we've been to Sea Wing in Charleston, and we've been to the festival in Thomasville, and Wetumpka has a great little art gallery there called the Kelly. My mama used to take painting lessons there when she was young, and having my family history there, my wife and I, Cindy, wanted to do something for Wetumpka to honor my family. So we got involved with the Kelly Fitzpatrick Art Gallery and came up with an idea of, why don't we have Alabama's Wildlife Festival? And we're in the center of the state. It's a great community. So this will be our third year of the Wildlife Art Festival. And last year we had 62 wildlife artists competing for substantial prize. And we had just a day of activities. We had dog demonstrations from Covey Flush Kennels coming this year. We had Wild Rose Kennels doing demonstrations last year. It's going to be on October the 19th, which is a Saturday in the fall, which is a beautiful time of the year. We got added an oyster roast this year, a low country bowl. A bourbon tasting, which hopefully will be later on in the day. And we've got a floral workshop for the ladies that will be conducted by Flower Magazine. We'll have archery and casting lessons for the younger crowd. So it's going to be a really fun day. We got wildlife chefs coming that are very notable. So it ought to be a fun day in Wetumpka in October. So,
and Marilyn's coming down too, right? President and CEO of Pheasants Forever and Quail.
We're going to have a luncheon in the middle of the day, right there in the middle of town, where Marilyn will come and speak, and we have Tall Timbers coming from Tallahassee to speak. So we'll have a number of landowners from around Alabama coming to here, because that will be the center of the universe for quail on that Saturday in the country.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Saturday, October 19th, can learn more at the Kelly, KELLY.org, and look up Wetumpka Wildlife Arts Festival. Alabama Black Belt Adventures.org. That's the website where you can learn all about the hunting, fishing, travel opportunities in the Alabama Black Belt. Thomas, anything we missed that you wanted to talk about related to Gusto, Alabama Black Belt, Wetumpka Arts Festival, quail, any other endeavors you got going on that you haven't talked about yet?
Well, I think you tapped me out this morning, but invite everybody to come to Alabama. We've got great bird hunting and a great history in Alabama Black Belt of Alabama, and want to share it with the world.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your time. I'll give you one final question for a gentleman that's so passionate about quail and quail hunting, and spent your life making Gusto just one of the most magical quail destinations, quail habitats that I've ever experienced. So I've got one question for you. If you had the ability to go quail hunting with anyone throughout history, living or dead, past to present, who would that be, Thomas?
Oh, it puts a lump in my throat to talk about. I've had some great mentors in my life, really superstars in one way or another. And they kind of brought me along, and I really appreciate being mentored, and I've kind of dedicated myself to do some mentoring myself, and because I know what it meant to be. But there were three people that I'd love to be with again that I've hunted with. One would be my father, who was an avid hunter. It would be Colin Campbell, who was head of the trust department at the bank that I started, and he kind of moved me along in the bank and became one of my best friends in life. And then Malcolm McLean, which owned a big quail plantation called Sehoy in Alabama. Malcolm was one of the people that changed the world. He was the father of containerization and taught me so much about life and vision and imagination and business. Those three people would clearly be one of the best days of my life if we would be all together behind a bird dog in the Black Belt of Alabama.
Outstanding. Well, thank you for what you're doing as a volunteer on the National Board of Directors for Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. It sounds like a fun hunt with people that have shaped you into somebody that clearly gives back to the community and to the state that you love. So thanks for sharing your story, Thomas.
Always great being with you. Have a great weekend. Thank you.
All right. That is Thomas Harris, a member of the National Board of Directors for Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. And if you can't tell, that gentleman loves quail and he loves the state of Alabama. I'm Bob St. Pierre, reminding you to always follow the dog. Something good will rise. Thanks for listening, folks.